Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
NFL Live. Deshaun Watson and Jamal Adams both had their fifth-year options picked up. What does it mean for those two teams, and is a long-term deal in their future? Plus, plenty of rumors circulating around the third pick of the draft. The Lions held on. They opted for cornerback Jeff Okuda. Tom Rinaldi has his remarkable story. And speaking of the draft, Jerry Jones and company quite pleased with their 2020 class. But was it truly better than that 05 class? My guess is Marcus Spears has something to say about that. Happy to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm Wendy Nix. The aforementioned Marcus Spears is here, Ryan Clark as well, and Dan Graziano. Mel Kiper joins us also. We continue to look closely at one, if not the most surprising move in the 2020 draft. Green Bay chose to move up in the first round to take quarterback Jordan Love. This despite considerable speculation the Packers would be in the market for additional weapons for their current quarterback, a guy named Aaron Rodgers. Maybe you've heard of him, Ryan Clark. My guess is you have. It's the first time we've heard from you and Marcus since the draft. So what do you make of the Packers' decision?
Well, you know, that decision is still mind-boggling to me. You know, you understood that they needed to get some weapons. Aaron Rodgers is getting up there in age, but he is still a more than capable quarterback and one of the best we've ever seen. So when you move up to get Jordan Love, you say that you're planning for the future, but I still wanted to be patient and wait to see what they did with the rest of the draft. They got him a big back in the second round, and then they did nothing to improve his options on the outside. There were over 30 wide receivers picked, and the Green Bay Packers just thought that none of them were good enough to be on their team or help Aaron Rodgers. Did they forget what it looked like when Devontae Adams was down last year? And so, Matt LaFleur, Gunakis, you guys have failed Aaron Rodgers. You have failed the Green Bay Packers in the present. Now, maybe in the future, Jordan Love becomes a great quarterback, and you can say, you know what, we planned for our future on that day. But by the time Jordan Love becomes a great quarterback, Matt LaFleur might not even be the coach of the Green Bay Packers.
I like the draft pick. I'm going to be honest with you. And here's why. Because we look across this league and I point directly to New England having no succession plan. Now, obviously, I've lamented about Bill Belichick feeling like he had a replacement in Jarrett Stidham because he didn't make any moves for a quarterback. But the Green Bay Packers will not, perceivably, if Jordan Love pans out, get caught in a situation where they don't have an heir apparent to Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is not a spring chicken anymore. So I like that draft move. And then as far as wide receiver, I don't know why everybody's pissed off. They've never drafted one. He's had a first round draft pick at wide receiver one time since he's been the starting quarterback in Green Bay. And oh, by the way, this team went 13-3 last year. They made it to the NFC Championship. And it was not because of offense that they got drubbed off the field against San Francisco. When Jimmy Garoppolo only has to throw 8 passes to win an NFL football game, you have more problems than a wide receiver coming in and changing the perspective of your team. They feel like Aaron Rodgers can lift the talent around him. They feel like Devontae is a premier wide receiver. They got a tight end, and they got him 3 offensive linemen as well. So they helped. They just didn't help in the skill position category. And we've seen dudes do great things with guys that are perceivably unknown. And if anybody can do it, it's Aaron Rodgers. But the bottom line to this, Wendy, is this. Don't give up almost 300 yards rushing in a playoff game, and we're probably talking about a Super Bowl team. That's all I got.
That's all you got. All right. Well, judging from my friend down RC.
DeMarcus Spears. Oh, my goodness. Did you just say, I don't know why everybody's mad because they never draft a receiver in the first round? Would you say that if you were like, I don't know why that's everybody's exactly mad the Bulls didn't draft Michael Jordan because they don't never draft nobody from North Carolina? That the past don't matter today. The past does not matter. They needed to get weapons. And it's okay that you don't use a first-round draft pick on them. This was a very deep wide receiver draft. But you have to get one at some point. And you point to the 300 yards giving up to the San Francisco 49ers in the championship. But it was largely because of that defense, adding the Smith, adding Amos in the backfield, drafting a Savage early, that allowed them to get to that point. It wasn't because Aaron Rodgers was throwing the ball all around the yard, because you're just had to cover one person. And so to use the draft pick could be okay. They might not get caught with their pants down in 5 years, but it ain't gonna do nothing for the 4 years between that when you aren't winning games because you can't score points. Aaron Rodgers at one time could take any wide receiver and make them great. And any group of wide receivers and be productive, but he's not the same anymore. And Devontae Adams is the second round guy. Jordy Nelson was the second round guy. We wasn't asking that you took one at 26. We was asking that you took one at some point.
Well, listen, both of you make valid points. One sec, Marcus, hold tight, and I'll come back to you because I do want to get to Dan here for just a minute because I don't care what he says publicly.
Sorry, Dan.
Listen, guys, you know Aaron Rodgers. We can think what we think all day long. Aaron Rodgers, Dan, probably less than thrilled about this, even if he is confident he'll win in any type of competition, which he likely will.
Aaron Rodgers has been on the Packers for 15 years. If anyone knows how the Packers operate, it's Aaron Rodgers. And the Packers always draft the same way. They don't draft to fill immediate needs on the current roster. They draft to make sure the roster stays good for years and years and years. And truth be told, it has been extremely successful. Since Aaron Rodgers became the Packers' starting quarterback, the only two teams in the NFL that have won more games, including playoff games, are the Patriots and the Steelers. So no one in the NFC. They've played in four NFC championship games in that time, obviously won the Super Bowl. You know, we want to look and compare them to the Patriots, or we say that Aaron Rodgers only won one Super Bowl. That's putting a very high standard on it. When you actually compare them to other teams in the league, the Packers have been extremely successful during Rodgers' tenure. They're already good, as Marcus points out. They were 13-3 last year. So when you talk to Packers people, when GM Brian Gutekunst talking to him after the draft pick on Thursday night, he said, look, you can make a lot of mistakes thinking you're one player away. And that was an answer to the question of why didn't you take a receiver to help this year's receiving corps. They are thinking about the next 5 and 10 years. And to Ryan's point about Matt LaFleur, on average, since 1959, the Packers head coach stays in that position for an average of 6 years. It's a different kind of organization.
All right, Mel, I know you're on one side of this argument as well. What's your take?
Couple things, Wendy. I think you look at it historically in terms of the draft. I don't remember many times where the number one need of a team and the number one strong position was that same need, but you didn't take anybody. The need of the Green Bay Packers, number one, was wide receiver. Strength of this draft was wide receiver. At some point, you don't get one for Aaron Rodgers. And if they did have one, we wouldn't be having this discussion right now. And Aaron, it wouldn't be illuminated even more for Aaron Rodgers. And everybody's talking about failing Aaron Rodgers. How about failing Devontae Adams? It's Devontae Adams only. Nobody else at wide receiver catches any passes of consequence. It's all Devontae Adams. Even with missing four games, he still had 48 more than the next wide receiver. So to me, Aaron Rodgers has overcome a lot with journeyman receivers for the most part. Get him one. The Ravens traded into the sixth round to get one. The Raiders took three. Everybody in the division with the Packers took one. The Vikings took two. The major need of this team was wide receiver. You got Aaron Rodgers' replacement down the road, and you didn't get him a wide receiver when that was your number one priority. And a strong wide receiver, historically strong wide receiver draft, makes absolutely zero sense.
I do think it gets lost in the argument that they moved up to take Jordan Love, and people see, oh, why'd they do that? That can be fine. I think the subsequent argument is, why didn't you do something after the fact? Because there was a lot of time left first-round pick. Go ahead, Marcus.
Can I ask a question?
Go ahead. Your hands up.
Why do we feel like why do we feel like we know what's best for the Green Bay Packers? As Dan Graziano just pointed out, this has been a successful football team. Like, I get it. I get what perception is. But obviously, the Green Bay Packers didn't feel that way in drafting
and
they drafted.
And they don't
we could
have
say
to.
What the needs were.
Marcus.
Yeah, we could talk
Marcus,
about.
Marcus Swagless Spears. Swagless Spears. I got a question for you. Do you think Brett Favre is an all-time great quarterback? Do you think Aaron Rodgers is an all-time great quarterback? So they've had like over 20 years of these two all-time great quarterbacks, right? How many Super Bowls they got?
I think two between them. How many did Drew got?
Like two.
How many did Drew Brees got?
Two.
Drew Brees got.
Let me ask you Drew Brees got one.
See here.
What?
See, here's the problem. Here's the problem,
Marcus.
Here's the problem. Everybody wants their great quarterback to have one or more Super Bowls. Has Tom Brady made us forget?
That's exactly what's happened. I was just going
to
say that.
Super Bowl.
Yes, he has.
No, I take the Patriots out of every argument.
All right, fellas, look, guess what? This is going to be the gift that keeps on giving, and I'm okay with it, not mad at it. We're going to talk about it again. I'll leave you with this, and we'll move on. Aaron Rodgers has thrown exactly one touchdown to a first-round pick. All right, fellas, here we go. The Chargers, another team that drafted the quarterback on Thursday, taking Justin Herbert at 6th overall. Now, here's GM Tom Telesco on the Pat McAfee show earlier today, and he had this to say about his team's first-round pick.
If Justin Herbert goes 5 to Miami, is Tua a Los Angeles Charger?
Yeah, we felt great about both guys. Well, actually, we felt great about all three quarterbacks that went in the top 6. So all three are going to be really good players in this league. And that it's a comforting factor to know. I mean, hopefully we don't pick 6 very often.
True.
If we do, I won't be making very many picks here. So if you're going to pick this high, and there's a potential down-the-road franchise quarterback there that you like, you have to take him. And we were lucky to have some quarterbacks there in this draft that were really good players.
All right, Dan, you know, who knows? But let's take him at his word. Is this an issue at all that he would not necessarily have preferred, or maybe I shouldn't say that, would have taken either quarterback that was there, Herbert or Tua?
No, I think his point is that they viewed both of these guys as potential franchise guys. There's nothing wrong with that. Joe Burrow as well, he threw in there, although he knew he was never going to get him. But, Herbert they love and Tua they love. And there's a lot of people around the league that thought very, very highly of both quarterbacks. You don't have to think one is great and think the other is garbage. I mean, like, they ideally will both succeed in the NFL along with Burrow. So I think what Telesco is trying to say is, if you're ever going to be picking 6th and you were thinking about a long-term need at quarterback, this was a great year to have that pick. So no, I just think it's a compliment to both guys and a reflection of how the Chargers felt going into the draft, that they were in a really good spot.
In 2004, there was a great philosopher named Mel Kiper Jr. who said that Roethlisberger, Manning, nor Rivers would be a bust. And if so, he bet his job on it. It seems like Telesco has done that. He looked at the draft and he saw these three top quarterbacks and said, we believe that all of these guys can go forward and be franchise quarterbacks. And so he was okay with either of the draft picks. And I think, one, it tells you that they knew no matter what, they were going to come out of this draft with a first round quarterback. But they also felt comfortable with whatever they do, they would be in a better position for it down the road. And I think that's a comforting feeling to have as a team. This team doesn't have a ton of holes. They address the offensive line in the offseason through free agency. They know you get Derwin James back healthy this year, so you expect to be better defensively. I think they made the right pick. I don't necessarily know. I believe this team is better if it has Tua over Justin Herbert, but if you believe in Justin Herbert, this was the move to make for the Los Angeles Chargers.
Let me just say this, Ryan, real quick, because your point's well taken. I think when you look at where they were, Tom Telesco made the point, I'm picking 6th. I need a quarterback. If you're picking in the 20s, you got to trade up and give up a lot of draft capital to do that. Mm. They obviously felt comfortable with any one of the three. Tua would have felt they would have taken him. So at 6, you take the quarterback. And certainly, like you say, with Eli, Rivers, Roethlisberger, those guys turned out fine. Some years you didn't. Some years you had the one be great, another be a bust. You think about Mariota and Winston still trying to find their way. But in this case, I think all three, you got to feel pretty comfortable. You're Cincinnati, the Chargers, and certainly at 5, Miami, as long as Tua can stay healthy, that you have franchise quarterbacks with all three teams.
All right, Marcus, you get the last word here.
Yeah, I agree with what all these guys said. The one thing I would point out is, for all of the conversation that we had around Tua Tagovailoa, the fact that he was going to go 5th or 6th is in a testament to him and these teams' comfortability. Yeah. We talked about not being able to get a physical, his durability questions, things that he would and wouldn't be able to do. But obviously Miami and L.A. had him and held him in high regard and thought that he was a franchise-changing quarterback and to keep them in contention with being a very good team. So I just wanted to point that out because we had so much conversation leading into it, and we start to hear the flip-flop between Justin Herbert and Tua Tagovailoa. And you see both of these guys get drafted to really good places, I think, that are trying to make winning strides. You look at Miami for Tua, and Tua is in the position now where Miami has shown a real good commitment to trying to be a better football team. And to Ryan's point, saying L.A. was still a very good team. Phillip Rivers didn't have a great season. So it's a testament to how good of a quarterback Tua was for him to go at five to Miami, but also would have went six if it would have been flip-flopped.
You know what, Marcus, I couldn't agree more, and I'll go back to what Dan said, and that's the NFL is better for it. We all are if both of these young athletes succeed at the next level.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
The Houston Texans have picked up quarterback Deshaun Watson's fifth-year option. That's for the 2021 season, according to our Field Yates. He led the Texans to a 10-6 record last season and an AFC South title. He's scheduled to make $4.4 million during the 2020 season. Since he entered the league, that was in 2017, all he's done is win. Deshaun's 6-4-9 win percentage, his eighth best in the league, is 10-game winning drives. Game-winning drives in the regular season trail only Drew Brees and Russell Wilson. So the ultimate goal here, one would assume, Dan, is a long-term deal. What's the potential right now?
Well, the Texans have let Deshaun Watson know that they want him around long-term. And our Ed Werder reported last week they've had very preliminary talks. I don't think they've gotten very far down the road, nor do they have to. They still have him for this year, then the fifth-year option year in 2021. Then they could franchise him after that. So just like we've been talking about for much of the offseason with Patrick Mahomes, no real rush to do an extension now, really, for either side. But the Texans obviously plan to have Deshaun Watson around for a long time, and I think at some point they will move toward a long-term deal to make sure that happens.
Deshaun Watson, not the only player looking for a new deal. Jets GM Joe Douglas confirmed yesterday his team will pick up the fifth-year option on safety Jamal Adams. Now, Adams isn't participating in the team's offseason program, which started virtually on Monday. He has certainly been productive on the field, ranking in the top five in snaps, tackles, sacks, and forced fumbles among defensive backs. In fact, his 12 sacks, a record for most sacks by a defensive back in their first three seasons. Look, this situation a little bit different because there is some water under the bridge here. Does this help or hurt the prospect of an extension for Jamal Adams, Dan?
I don't think it hurts. I think it's a formality for a lot of these players. These players that have been great players for their teams, obviously the fifth-year option is almost certainly going to be picked up unless it's a case like Christian McCaffrey, who already got his extension done, so it's immaterial. I think with regard to the Jets and Jamal Adams, the Jets have made it clear that they want him around long-term. They think very highly of him as a player and that their intention is to sign him to a long-term deal. But you reference it may not be super cut and dried with Adams because there has been a little bit of animosity between him and the team regarding did they field trade calls about him last October, etc. So ideally, for everyone's sake, that relationship gets smoothed over and they get to a long-term deal. My understanding is that at this point is still the plan.
All right, Ryan, I know you have spoken to Jamal Adams during this process. What's the takeaway there?
I mean, I think Jamal understands that he's the best player on the team. He wants a long-term commitment. And I mean, if anybody understands and knows Jamal, is that he's chasing greatness. And so it's not necessarily only about being a New York Jet or any specific place to play. It's about being comfortable, feeling loved, and being wanted. And that's what he wants from the New York Jets. I actually haven't even asked him any questions about this. This is just me knowing Jamal and having dealt with him. I think going forward, this part of it doesn't matter. This option is going to be exercised on anybody who is the best player on their team that is in the first year of their deal. And that's exactly what Jamal Adams is for this team. And so going forward, I know he wants a long-term deal. I know the team wants that done as well. It's going to come at a hefty price. And if the New York Jets are willing to pay that, I don't think that this becomes a big deal about animosity or any water under the bridge or anything that has happened previously. It's about the present time, getting a deal done, having both sides being happy, and moving forward that way.
All right, Marcus, look, the landscape in the AFC East has changed, and not because of anything the Jets or the Bills or the Dolphins did, maybe a little bit, but mostly because Tom Brady finally took off. You know, where do the Jets stack up now that this this division will or could possibly shift for the first time in 11 seasons?
Wendy, I would love to say the Jets shift to the best team, but that's all predicated on Sam Darnold jump. And that's also, we also have to remember, even though Tom Brady left, Bill Belichick is still the coach at New England. Last time I checked, and New England did a lot of things defensively last year to confuse their AFC East opponents, except Miami and Ryan Fitzpatrick at the end of the year. But when you look at it, this is a young team, really good talent, drafted a big tackle for Sam Darnold this year, Mekhi Becton, brought in Denzel Mims after losing their number one receiver, Robbie Anderson. So you look at everything that they've done, they've made really good strides, and they feel like they have a franchise-changing quarterback. They need Quinnen Williams to come on, the third pick of the draft last year. And then, obviously, talking about Jamal, he needs to continue to assert himself as one of the best safeties in the league, which I definitely think he is. And as far as his contract situation, this, I think it's all predicated on if Jamal wants to continue to stay in New York and play for the Jets more so than anything, if both sides are willing to play ball. But the Jets should be better this year because Sam Darnold has another year and Tom Brady is gone, obviously. But I still cannot dismiss the Pats right now because Belichick and that defense damn near carried them to another 13-win season.
Yeah, no question. I think to dismiss New England is premature. There's little question about that. But, Mel, listen, one thing not in question, Mekhi Becton is, in fact, some big protection for Sam Darnold. Big, the operative word there. Do you like what the Jets did in this draft?
I do, Wendy. Again, the B draft. Joe Douglas in the fourth round didn't draft a future replacement for Sam Darnold and James Morgan, but Morgan will be like Jake Fromm to Josh Allen, assist. He's a cerebral quarterback, help Sam Darnold, and certainly address all the needs, and they did that. They needed going in offensive line help, Mekhi Becton, obviously, but also Cameron Clark, kid out of Charlotte, who did a great job against Clemson. And I think when you look at the offensive line, now they get a little bit better there. Then you think wide receiver Denzel Mims, how quickly does he transition from Baylor's offense to the Jets? We'll see on that one. Then you go to running back with Michael Piron. He's a heck of a receiver coming out of that backfield. Defensively, you needed a pass rusher. They got it with Jabari Zuniga. Secondary help as well with Ashton Davis. Big athletic DB, could maybe be a corner. Bryce Hall would have been a higher pick had not been for the injury. And they finished it off, Joe Douglas did, with a kid who's got a big-time leg, a booming punter, and Braden Mann coming out of A&M. I compared him on draft day when he was picked on day three to Shane Lechler, who had that great career with the Raiders coming out of Texas A&M. I expect similar results from Braden Mann with the Jets.
All right, Dan, before we move on, any other fifth-year option scenarios we should keep an eye on?
Yeah, there's a couple that are going to be tricky. The Bears and Mitchell Trubisky, you know, he's a guy they just traded for Nick Foles, so obviously they're not as all the way in on Trubisky as they've said they were since they drafted him. Pick up his option for 2021, be $24.5 million. Not guaranteed against anything but injury until next March, but still a risk. If you were to pick it up and he gets hurt, you're on the hook for that money for a guy you don't know if he's the one you want to have around as your starting quarterback. And then Leonard Fournette with the Jaguars. Adam Schefter reporting just before the draft that the Jaguars were talking about trading Fournette, no takers. He's got about $4 million coming this year. The option would be about $8.5 million. I think it would be a surprise at this point to see the Jaguars, given what we know about the state of that relationship, picking up that option on Fournette.
All right, Dan, thank you. The Steelers, meanwhile, picked up T.J. Watt's option. The Eagles did the same thing for Derek Barnett.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name? Check. Birthday? Social Security? Is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico. Always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Well, the Cowboys had an interesting draft using their first round selection on wide receiver C.D. Lamb. You could argue they had a boatload of talent. Given Jerry's penchant for drafting on a yacht, they also filled several holes. Trevon Diggs and Reggie Robinson in the second, corners, as well as taking Wisconsin center Tyler Viendez in the fourth round. Here's what Jerry said. He appears to be pretty pleased with how the Cowboys did over the weekend. He said, I was pretty tickled when DeMarcus Ware was at the top of our board with that draft. He's talking about 05, I think. We had a pretty good feeling about that draft. Now we had two. I'm not so sure we've had one, had one with only one that I feel any better about. It doesn't take much to get me feeling good. Seriously, this is really one of the best. Now, if I read the tea leaves here, Marcus Spears, he's saying he likes this draft about as good as any he's had. And I do believe you were part of one of them. Where are you? Are
yes,
you there?
Wendy, I
You're
was.
There.
I was a part of it.
Be nice, Ryan Clark. Yeah, go ahead,
here
Marcus.
Here I go. Okay. It the 2005 draft class was really good. We got a Hall of Famer in DeMarcus Ware in that draft. People don't remember Marion Barber, who was a really good running back out of Minnesota. Kevin Burnett, yes, linebacker out of Tennessee. Chris Canty was a defensive end out of Virginia who went on to play for the Giants and win Super Bowls. But the gem of the draft, man, was a guy by the name of Jay Ratliff. Jay Ratliff came from Auburn, was played D-line at Auburn, drafted. I think Jay was drafted in the seventh round, ended up being an all-pro and pro bowler in a 3-4 defense at nose tackle at about 270 with his quickness and his ability to play. So that 05 draft class, man, it's hard to beat that one. But you look at what they were able to do in addressing so many different positions this year, replacing obviously Travis Frederick leaving with a Wisconsin center who you feel pretty good about on the offensive line, and then getting CeeDee Lamb at 17. Are you kidding me? So this was a really good draft. I don't know if it's as good as the 05 yet, though.
I tell you what, I'm biased, notably biased, but I think you're the gem of that draft class, Marcus. You're our gem anyway. Mel, you graded both of those draft classes. How would you compare the two?
I like 2005's better, and I'll tell you why in a minute, but I think this draft class I gave a B-plus to, Wendy. I think you look at what the guys were saying and Marcus was talking about. Will Bradley and I be that late-round steal coming out of Utah, ran 4.89. That's not what you want in a pass-rushing defensive end, but you turn on the tape, you got to be excited about Bradley and I. He was a heck of a player for the Utes. Will Tyler Biotis step in with what Frederick did at center, both out of Wisconsin? Not as good as Frederick, but can he overachieve a little bit and become that type of player? And Reggie Robinson II, cornerback out of Tulsa, was an ascender over the last 3 months. People were really on this guy. They grabbed him. He's got length and athleticism, and he had a great year for the Golden Hurricane. So beyond CeeDee Lamb, Neville Gallimore, and Trevon Diggs, I think those other guys will key it. Now back to 05. I had Marcus Spears 18th on the big board. He went 20th. Aaron Rodgers, I had 7th. He dropped even below Marcus Spears and became a steal for the Packers. My last comment for Marcus was, incredibly talented, but needs to sustain a little bit of a higher intensity level. Little did we know he'd bring that intensity to ESPN
yeah,
and the
no
SEC
more.
Network.
I can't take
there you
anymore.
Go, Marcus.
Mel, I need you to do an analysis on all of the analysts in talk radio. I need you to do a draft for analysts, man, and get our weaknesses and our positives and put it on there.
Guys, Marcus, let me ask you this, Marcus, and then I want to hear from everybody. Did the Cowboys do enough, regardless of how that draft compares, did they do enough to compete in the NFC East?
Yeah, they did. Wendy, to be honest with you, they should have been able to win the NFC East last year. But in order to compete, they should be able to win it. Now, obviously, losing Travis Frederick is huge. And I think we'll see some of the problems that they may have, especially with a season that we have coming up where you possibly don't have the all-season work to get Dak acclimated with a brand new center. And Looney is also there, too, who's been there and may have some rapport already with Dak Prescott. But you look at this draft. They got a slot receiver in CeeDee Lamb. They replaced Randall Cobb, who they had last year, which may be an upgrade at this point. And that's not to say Randall Cobb wasn't a really good player. Zeke is there for a full, well, perceivably full offseason. It should be better.
You know, I expect this team to be better just because when you look at the way they underachieved last year, how can it be any worse? They were really in a very bad division, which was the NFC East last year. They weren't great, and they still couldn't pull it off. I believe this draft was good. If those cornerbacks end up being good players, that truly helps, especially early. CeeDee Lamb is a steal, but there's still a lot of work to be done to think whether or not the Dallas Cowboys can compete at the level that they want to. But as far as the NFC East, I do believe it's a two-team race between the Cowboys and the Eagles.
And, of course, Ryan Clark, we all know that if it's a two-team race between the Cowboys and the Eagles, the Cowboys will win it because it's been 16 years since the NFC East had a repeat champion. Every year in the offseason, I make this point. Every year it continues to be true. Somehow, I think the Cowboys are definitely a contender, and history is on their side.
All right. Also notable, guys, the Cowboys have the third easiest schedule in the league. Now, speaking of the Eagles, one of the other notable picks of this draft, also in the NFC East, the Eagles took former Alabama and Oklahoma quarterback Jalen Hurts. Here's Eagles GM Howie Roseman explaining the rationale for that decision. Oh, here we go. This first, though, Carson Wentz had this to say. Welcome to the best football city in America, brother. That was two. Jalen Hurts, who responded in kind, so excited to get to learn from you in Philly. Let's get to work. Now here's GM Howie Roseman.
I think it's okay to question our thought process, and we'll get through that a little bit here. But, you know, I don't want to get lost in the fact that Jalen Hurts is an Eagle, and he's ours. And this is one of the great college football players of the last 4 years. This is one of the great character guys in this draft. This is one of the great leaders in this draft. This is an asset to any football team. And I want our fans to take a minute and just watch that guy and see that this is a talented guy that we added to our football team. Yeah, we're not looking for Carson's replacement. I hope Carson plays till, you know, all these guys are playing 40, 42 years old. They're not doing that. But, you know, we just feel like this is the most important position in sports. And we think this player has something to him. And I think that, you know, you've seen that there are opportunities there where the quarterbacks, they're the most valued position too. And you get an opportunity to get one. And you think about it and think about what can have more factor on all of our lives than happiness and how that affects all of us. Carson's an ultimate team guy. Do I think he's human and probably would want to do whatever's best for the team this year to help him win another Super Bowl championship? Yeah, probably. But I think you saw it in his tweet. He's first class all the way, and he's a team guy all the way.
In the last 5 years, we've seen several defensive backs drafted in the top six. That includes Jalen Ramsey, Jamal Adams, who we talked about, and Denzel Ward, all of whom have already made at least one Pro Bowl. But now add Okuda, the highest drafted D-back since Sean Springs, third overall in 1997. Ryan, what makes Okuda so special?
I think when you look at him, it's his length, it's his ability to compete, and the way that he forces people into tough catches. Even if you go back to his freshman year when he was wearing 29, it was very difficult to catch footballs on Jeff Okuda. He's a guy who can play press. He was also great at Bell when asked to do that at Ohio State, and he's a finisher. You can even look back to the semifinal this year when he's playing against NFL receivers in T. Higgins and Justin Ross, and he was locked down, shut down, and he shut out those wide receivers, and that's what you're going to get from him in Detroit. He's going to be a guy that's going to be asked to replace Darius Slay Jr., and in their very heavy man scheme, I think he was the best fit for the Detroit Lions at pick number 3, and he will excel from day one. He's a day one starter, and when you pick a guy in the top 5, you expect him to make Pro Bowls early, and that's what will be expected from Jeff Okuda.
Plug and play. You're exactly right. Ryan, thank you. Let's look ahead, shall we? This year's draft just ended already. We look ahead. The dates are now set. Get ready, Mel Kiper, if you're out there. The 86th NFL Draft will be held April 29th to May 1st, so a little later next year, 2021, in downtown Cleveland, Ohio. Here we come. Rams head coach Sean McVay, the youngest in the NFL. He's just 34 years old, but this virtual offseason isn't for everyone. Here's the head coach on his first technical difficulties of the season.
Today was the first day of our virtual offseason program. It was pretty smooth other than my first team invite where it was a team meeting. I somehow disconnected the only to enable audio on the telephone setting, provided some good comic relief for guys. I was feeling myself a little too much on this IT and got a dose of humble pie this morning.
It was crazy millennials. Ryan Clark, listen, I'm not about to throw any stones because we all know where I land with these IT technical difficulties, but it's not for everybody, Ryan.
Listen, I'm terrible. I tried to do an IG live the other day, and I'm screaming to my kids off to the side, asking them, can you hear me? Can you listen? Can you give me a comment so you can request me? So I don't know anything about any of this. So for me, I'm not mad at Sean McVay at all.
Something tells me he's better than both of us anyway. Marcus, you're pretty good at this stuff, I feel like.
Wendy, I'm pretty good at technology, but there ain't no way in hell Sean McVay on the West Coast supposed to have IT trouble. That is the home and the hub of IT. Silicon Valley right down
the
street,
West Coast.
And he having problems with his IT.
Gentlemen, it is fun as always. Hopefully we get this thing back on the air tomorrow. See you later.